We are back in Mesilas Yesharim in your editions, either page 80 or 64. We talked about the Midah of Zehirut. We talked about the different components of Zehirut, of being vigilant in one's thoughts and one's actions. And now we're going to talk about the different ways for one to acquire Zehirut. And what the Ramchal does here is he basically divides people into three classes, into three groupings, and describes the best way, I guess, in his presentation for one to acquire the attribute of vigilance, depending on their particular level. What does that mean? Let's see. So he says, Amar HaChassid, Hinei, in general, what will bring a person to vigilance, what will bring a person to zihirut, is Torah, which makes sense because, again, that was how the Brita began, is that Torah brings a person to zihirut. If you don't know anything in Torah, then what are you supposed to be guarding yourself of? You wouldn't know, you wouldn't have the tools with which to answer that question to begin with. So in general, it's the Torah. Ukemosha amarti lechakvar, as I mentioned before. Ubifrat tuahit bonenut al chomer haavoda asher chayav ba haadam veomek hadin aleha. And specifically, contemplation. Again, that word's never going to go away. Hitbonenut, deeply contemplating the gravity of the work that's upon us, and how deeply we're judged based on our adherence to that work. Right, and that all we understand, both what the work is and the nature of our judgment over that avodat Hashem through the Torah itself. Right, we're in a kind of, just as an aside, parentheses, we're in kind of a scary place in this Midah. Why are we in kind of a scary place with this Midah in particular? What is this Midah called?
Zehirut.
How are we translating it?
Vigilance.
Great, what does that mean?
To be careful.
To be careful. Meaning, this Midah is always going to be coming from a perspective of watch out, fearfulness, be careful, protect yourself. There's just, recognize that there's a lot of kind of, well, in our minds, especially in right or wrong, what is a more kind of Ahava-focused generation as opposed to a Yira-focused generation. All of these overtones of things that we normally don't talk about unless it's in a Musar context, which is exactly where we are right now, is because it's specifically unique to the Midah that we're in. Meaning we're going very slow. But remember that if we're in the Midah of Zehirut, so we're going to be talking in a way that's meant to inspire fear or dread of crossing those lines that we don't want to cross. That's definitionally what the Midah is. When we move into other Midah, the conversation will take totally different tones. But I just want to clarify that the nature of the tone of this Midah is very specific to the Midah. Does that make sense? Or rather, any questions on that? Yeah.
Is it, I mean, I know this is another day, but is it kind of like what we were talking about with Gevura, about what Gevura is? It's staying within your boundaries and being cautious?
100%. I mean, it's relevant to the fact that, yeah, this would be more of a Gevura-oriented Midah. Yes, 100%. But in that sense, also, meaning if it's a Gevura-oriented, what do we attribute to Gevura? Yirat Shamayim. Yira, fear, specifically fear, din, judgment, Elokim, a judge, or God's name which indicates with judgment. So all of those things are going to be related to each other 100%. And that's an excellent connection. But yeah, you see, understand how that would be the case in this particular. So the way we're going to be talking within this Midah are let's put it this way, there are ways that will likely be somewhat uncomfortable and seem very Musri.
Harif.
You can be sharp and not Musri. I would claim you can be sharp and not Musri. It's very Musri. But that, right, well, see, that reaction that you just gave is exactly my point, meaning we just recognize that we tend to be in a generation that does not take well to Musr, but that the Musr that this generation tends to, in my humble opinion, based on conversations with a lot of people who do know what they're talking about, that this generation does tend to be more receptive to a Judaism that propels you forward. It gets you excited about doing mitzvot as opposed to fearful about not doing averos. Now, that doesn't disqualify us from being fearful of the consequences of our averos, which is why we're not going to skip chapters and why we have to deal with the realities, the harsh realities, what was the word that you used? The harif realities of what happens when we do averos and how to protect ourselves.
I just don't know if it's an effective way for this generation to...
And I'm agreeing with you. But I'm not going to skip the chapter. but also don't think that this is the only tone that the book takes. It's within the Midah of Zihirut, what other stance can you take? Right?
Why can't it be careful for your own well-being? Like, why? I mean, it's like, it's in the positive form, it's not necessarily in the negative.
But there's more room for it to reach the negative forms as well. In a be careful sort of way. It's like, you know, like, if you, like, we use the example that we gave of the construction site, if you walk around the block, you'll have such a beautiful morning, is another way of saying, like, you won't die if you walk through the construction site. But, like, you cannot say that, you mean you can avoid saying what you're trying to say, but if the idea is zihirut, of being careful of things that are dangerous to you, then straight up, it's dangerous to go through the construction site. But just to, not to, if this doesn't speak to you, A, open yourself up to it. That's part of what we're doing here, is to open ourselves up to new hashkafot, ways of looking at the world, even if they're uncomfortable, perhaps especially if they're uncomfortable. And second of all, don't, if that doesn't happen for you, don't turn away from the book, simply because this chapter is harder to swallow, especially in this generation. Is that fair? Okay. So, let's go forward. V'yatzaze min hayun b'ma'asim aktuvim b'sifrei ha-kodesh u'min ha-limud b'ma'amarei chazal shekhanan l'vracha ha-me'orim al zeh. So this understanding of the gravity of our service of God in this world, as well as how deeply we're judged, comes out through looking into what happens in the Sefer Kodesh, meaning in Tanakh, and also learning Ma'amarei Chazal, meaning from Tanakh and from Chazal, we can understand both of these things. And that will lead us to Zihirut. However, says the Ramchal, V'yesh yesh behit bonenut hazeh, ha'arot ha'arot b'hadraga. In this contemplation, there are going to be levels of what stirs a person to vigilance based on the nature of their character, meaning based on how much character work they've already done, will likely define the extent to which they will be, the nature of what will stir them to vigilance. Lishleimei hada'at, those who have a clear, holistic understanding, lepichutim mehem, those who are a little bit lowlier, and then lehamon am, lechol ha'amon kulo, and then everybody else. He is making a hierarchy here. The Shlamei Hadad is what we're going to strive for. Okay? Everybody else are probably going to quibble with a little bit, but that's because everybody here is tremendously holy. That's great. But let's stick with the Shlamei Hadad, right? That's what we're going to start with. L'Shlamei Hadad, for those who have a clear perception and understanding of things, T'yeh lehem ha'ara b'ma she'it barer lehem, ki rak ha'shlimu tu ha'davar asher ra'oi, she'yechameid mehem v'lo lezulat zeh. They'll be stirred to vigilance, in that it will be clear to them through what they've studied that only perfection is the only thing that's worth desiring and nothing else. V'she'ein ra gadol mechesron hashlimut v'harechik memenu. And that there's nothing worse than any lack of perfection and anything that would pull one away from that perfection. Meaning after you've looked through the sources, you've read the Sfarim, and you know what the goal is in this world. You know what you want to accomplish. You know why HaKadosh Baruch Hu put you here. And all you want to do is achieve that. Then you never would want to come close to those things that might pull you away from it. If you see with clarity what the goal of this world is, if you see with clarity what our job is, what is meant to be, what we're supposed to accomplish in this world, then you never would go and do anything astray. Kine, achar sheit ba'er ze etzlo, once this becomes clear to a person, v'it ba'er lahem kimokin hayot emsaim elav, ha'ma'asim ha'tovim v'amidot ha'tovot, and it becomes clear, so too, that the means through which to acquire perfection are indeed good actions and proper midot, that those are what we're striving to do, meaning that's what Torah wants from us, that's what Torah Shebichtav and Torah Shebal Peh demands of us, is Masim Tovim and Midot Tovot. Vadaihu Shelo Yitratsu Meolam Lehamit Ba'ilahem Saim Ola Kelbahem. Then he'll never ever want to lessen these means or to take them lightly. Person will spend their entire life trying to continuously work on their Midot and be Mitchazek in doing Mitzvot. It's already clear to them that if they were to lessen in any of these things, or if any of these means became weakened and were not as strong as they're required to be, They won't achieve true perfection. True perfection in this world is achieved through masim tovim, is achieved through midot tovot, by perfecting our character and our actions, according to the way the Torah prescribes. Ela yigara mehem kifi mashi shegaru heim bihishtadlutam. Rather, will be withheld for them according to the way in which they've reduced their effort. Vinim sa'im chasrei hashlemut, they'll be lacking perfection. To these people who know what true perfection is, this will be tremendously distressing for them, and it'll be evil for them. They don't want that. That's upsetting to them, because they understand what perfection is and how to acquire it, and to lessen that is, it's upsetting. Why would anybody want to do that? Why would I want to lessen my ability to achieve true perfection if I understand what perfection is, and I want to, and I therefore would obviously want to aspire to achieve that? Al-Kain. Lo yivcharu ela leharbot bahem, ulahachmir b'chol tana'ehem. Therefore, they wouldn't choose to do anything except to increase and strengthen all of these things in all of their conditions. V'lo yanuchu v'lo yishketu, pen yechsar mehem, mash yagia otan, el ashlimut asher him chafitzim. And they won't rest, and they won't be quieter in any way, lest they lose out on being able to achieve the true perfection that they aspire for, that they desire. And this is what Shlomo HaMelech said, according to Chazal. Ashrei Adam mefachei tamid, that praiseworthy is a person who's always fearful of making these mistakes. What does it mean that they're fearful of it, that they understand what the nature of that fear is? This is talking about Divrei Torah, that they're fearful never to stray from Divrei Torah. That's our highest level of person who's inclined. That's the highest level of motivation towards Zihirut. Is I want to be careful never to go in the negative path, because I know what true perfection is based on contemplation and Torah study. And I would never want to lose out on that perfection by doing anything that would lead me away from Maasim Tovim and Midot Tovot. Tov. Good.
So does that mean if, like sometimes you know something's bad for you and you do it anyway. So does that mean that you don't have a clear understanding of what the goal is or what perfection is? Because if you knew what it is, you wouldn't do it at all?
Or you may not understand the gravity of the consequences of your action. Meaning that would come through, I think that's a perfect a perfect way of describing the Mamar Chazal from the last parak that we kept on coming back to. Al kein yamru hamushlim biyitzram bo cheshbon. Those who are truly rule over their yitzer, they say bo cheshbon, bo unechshav cheshbono shel olam, hefseid mitzvah keneged schara, the loss of doing a mitzvah versus the schar of actually doing it, and you're given the opposite side, uschar avera keneged hefseida, and how much it's worth doing an avera versus how much you're going to lose out ultimately by having done that avera. But the only person who can truly understand that is one who has removed themselves from their yetzer hara and has a true perspective from engaged in Torah in a way where they have a clarity of vision. But one who is not clear on how much they're going to lose out versus gaining by doing the avera, they're tachat the moshel of their yetzer. I would assume. Meaning the assumption is that, I don't know, I don't have that level of clarity. I assume that a person has that level of clarity of the ramifications, both personally and cosmically, for a sin that they commit, would never, ever possibly be able to be pulled in that direction. Or certainly would war with their Yitzhahara to the nth degree in order to keep it from happening. But that comes through Hitbonenut and Limud Torah.
Wait, is it Hitbonenut or Hitbonenut?
Hitbonenut means contemplation. One of the main ways to successfully contemplate is to do so in solitude. Solitude is hitbodedut. Am levadad yishkon, to be a nation alone, right? So hitbodedut is solitude. What in our generation means going into a closed room, turning off the laptop and the phone, and probably leaving them outside the room, because you probably just put it on vibrate and you're going to hear the vibrate and think about it anyway when it goes off and then you're trying to be thinking about other things, right? Meaning actually, like, totally cutting off. The way that the Hasidim do it is that's the idea of the Hasid who goes and sits in solitude in the forest. Why do they go to the forest? Because they're actually cutting themselves off from the world that's around them. That's the idea of hitbodedut. It doesn't matter where or how you do it, as long as you actually are able to be alone and undisturbed. That is a prime time for hitbonenut. But one should be doing hitbonenut even when they're not doing hitbonenut. One's not exclusive to the other. Okay? Good? Okay. Tov. So he sums up in terms of this perspective and says, V'zot ha-madriga ha-mishubachat hi anikret yirat chet. This is the praiseworthy level that's called yirat chet, fear of sin. V'sha adam yarei tamid. This is a person who constantly fears. He's worried that he should ever be found in his hands any little bit of sin that would withhold him from any bit of perfection which he's obligated to work to achieve. And this is what's said through the mashal of Chazal, that every person is singed by the chuppah of their friend, meaning by the structure, by the house of their friend. What does it mean that everybody kind of is a little bit burned by the house of their friend? So it means ki ein zamit nei tam hakinah asher tipol rak basher ino shlemad hadad kemoshe eskor od b'siyat shmaya. It doesn't mean a person who's jealous or envious of their friend's chuppah. Here it means their friend's portion in Olam Haba. It doesn't mean a person who's envious or jealous of it and says, I should have it and not that person. That's not a good midah, as we'll explain b'siyata d'shmaya, says the Ramchal. El ibnei ro'oto atzmo chaser min ha-shlemut madriga sh'aye echol ha-sigota k'mo shi-siga chevero. Meaning, when a person sees their friend who's able to achieve a level of greatness, and that makes them realize that there is another achievable layer of greatness to get to, that pushes them to want to achieve that level of greatness as well. It's kinat sofrim. It's a positive type of kinat. It's a positive jealousy.
Talking about the fellow's canopy?
That it's homiletically here meant to mean that a person is singed by their fellow's house, meaning when they see their fellow's canopy in the world to come, They're like a little bit like singed by it. Why? Because if he got a bigger canopy, not because he didn't deserve it, because that means when I see what he's able to achieve, it means that it's achievable, and if it's achievable, then I want to do it too. Which is absolutely a good mitzvah to have. To want to aspire to achieve the heights that you see are attainable. Yeah.
In terms of that, if a person's kind of being singed by that in Olam Haba, at that point, wouldn't it be too late?
No, by seeing what their friend is going to get in Olam Haba through what they achieved in Olam Haza. Yeah.
Okay. Thanks.
By the inevitable chuppah of their friend, not the present.
Got it.
And having nothing to do with Shidduchim. Talking about structures, not necessarily a chuppah per se.
Different conversation. Different.
Yes, exactly. Not definitely not for here. Tov. Let's talk about level number two. Okay? That's level number one. That's the highest and most lofty level. I suspect that there will be the most dissent with level number two. Be prepared. Okay? He's taking a particular perspective based on his times. Which doesn't make it any less true now, but I think that we may relate to it a little bit less. People in this room, I think, also are loftier necessarily than the middle level. I think, let's put it differently, I think there might be people in the room who are more relate to the third level even than the second level. Like, one and three, I think, might be most relatable. Two, I suspect people in this room might have more of an issue with.
I think the first one is relatable.
One? I think it's something that we can aspire to. I mean, we understand the concept. Like, if I could really see clearly, like, I would want that, and I know that if I were to see clearly, I wouldn't want to do things that were wrong.
Yeah, but then again, like, there's so many different, especially now, there's so many definitions of what's right and wrong. You honestly, I mean, you hope that you know that what you're doing is right, and...
No, so he says the first thing is this first is Limud Torah.
Yeah, but even within that, it's like, I don't know.
There's only a certain level of plurality in Torah, as one of my rabbis once put it. There's a concept of Shivim Panim Torah. There are 70 faces to the Torah. I said, but don't forget, there's only 70.
But as far as like people's spiritual journey, I do think that there are many different ways.
That spiritual journey doesn't necessarily mean that all parts of the journey are defined by the parameters of Torah.
So you're saying that only in relation to Torah, as far as like being...
No, he's saying that one needs to learn Torah to know what truth is.
Okay.
Once one knows the truth based on the Torah, whatever refracted element of absolute truth that is, then that's fine. You could be a Hillel or a Shammai, and you're still going to Olam Haba.
He's talking about, I'm confused whether he's talking about, like, halacha, or if he's talking about, like...
He's talking about Ashkatha and halacha.
I just think those are two very different things. I think halacha has a lot more rigid guidelines, there's a lot less flexibility, and I think as far as, like, your spiritual journey, I think that there are multiple ways. I almost think it doesn't make sense to be like, oh, my friend's there, and I'm here. Like, it's different. Like, we spoke about this in the past. as far as like us being different than other people, and every person is kind of their own. You can't compare yourself to somebody else. It's very challenging, I think, to do that.
I agree. I'm missing the connection to this.
Is this that you're like jealous of what your friend is doing? Like maybe I'm not understanding the canopy situation.
No, we're talking two different conversations. Let's do them separately. First is that a person can only achieve a true, clear perspective from Torah. That's the claim of the Ramchal, that Torah precedes Zihirut.
Okay.
The loftiest person in Zihirut will be motivated by the fact that because they have a clarity in understanding what Torah says about how to see the world, the goal of the world, and how to act within the world, because of that they would never want to do anything else. Now, there could be multiple conclusions that a person can come to that are all valid within Torah, but there's a limited number of them. And all of them are really not as different as people would like to make them out to be. We get very uptight about subtle differences. We tend to emphasize the differences in Judaism more than in the unification within Judaism. I'm not talking about like fluffy everybody hold hands and sing Kumbaya together. I'm saying like even within like people who are all Shomri Torah and Mitzvos, we tend to get more upset about the slightest, teensiest differences and make a whole big deal out of them. Nobody's keeping Shabbos on Thursday. You know what I'm saying? Like, no, nobody's like arguing whether pig is treif. There's an infinite amount more than we agree on than we don't agree on within Torah Judaism. So in Torah Judaism, you have different variations, but the variations are a lot more subtle than we tend to emphasize.
In halacha.
And in hashkafa. Again, I would still claim that if one were to think carefully between what we present here based on the Ramchal and what Rabbi Eli and Miriam present in Rambam, there are differences, and we're going to harp on those differences. But again, the Rambam and the Ramchal were keeping the same Shabbos. They both weren't doing Borer, and they both weren't doing Borer the same way.
Yeah, but that's exactly what she's saying.
What?
Because she's saying that halacha is, like, you can't argue with it, it's black and white. So
halacha is far from black and white.
Okay, but for us now, in the practical level, it's black and white. None of us are sitting here and, like, paskening over, like, whether stuff is okay or not. It's much more like, this is, here's what you do it, and, like, but your relationship with Hashem, your relationship with the outside world, based on
how it is not so simple. We've codified it in a way where we've oversimplified the bottom line of halacha, usually by just going with the most machmir permutation. But that doesn't mean that halacha is simple in the slightest.
But it's much more agreed upon than
halacha. Not necessarily agreed upon.
And what I would say is, I think in the same way that there are subtle differences in hashkafa that get blown up, when you, at some point in your life, if you choose to engage halacha on a more bi'iyun level, the subtle differences there are blown up very big as well.
But I'm saying practically the way that we live our lives.
How about when to daven mincha? Should you daven mincha immediately when mincha starts, or should you daven mincha at the last possible second to daven mincha? Some hold that it's lechatchila to daven mincha gedola, and everything else is bidyeved. Some hold that it's lechatchila to daven mincha katana, and everything else is bidyeved. Well, then when's lechatchila to daven mincha? That's so annoying. I'm losing from someone. How could you argue about
that's
that?
That's always like that. That's the Kalah Shama, that's back to that. So of like, it's always going to be like that.
Hear your own words. It's always like that in halacha.
Okay, but at the end of the day, you have to do something.
Yeah.
Same thing with hashkafa. Long as you've picked a legitimate Torah perspective in hashkafa and in halacha, both of which have variations, but the variations are subtle. They're not arguing in the Shulchan Aruch. There's no argument about whether or not to daven mincha.
It's just when.
There's an argument about not even when, but which time is lechatchilin b'dieved. It means, according to some opinion, every single day when I daven 120 mincha, according to the Shulchan Aruch, it's b'dieved. Rav Yosef Karo is looking down at me and slamming himself in the head every time I go and daven at 120 mincha. But then he says, okay, fine, this is Ashkenazi. I'm saying, like, what does it mean that there could be such disparate opinions? The answer is
they're not that disparate.
And
one of them holds a tefillah, one of them holds a b'dieved.
So let you two both stand up for a second. Stand up.
No, I don't want to.
Let you both sit down and be the paradigm sitting on whatever makes you comfortable on the other side of the room of saying, listen, we recognize that in hashkafa and in halacha there are differences. Ricky says, come on, they're not such a big deal. Lital says, What are you talking about? That's huge.
That's not what I'm saying. I'm saying that I believe there are differences in both, but I believe that the differences in hashkafa are more... I think that they have more elements of gray. Maybe, and that's my opinion.
I suspect that it's... I also suspect that it might relate to the amount of hashkafa that you've been exposed to versus the amount of halakha or the nature of the halakha that you've been exposed to. It's possible.
But there are... I just think that if you have a halakha question, you go to a rabbi, and they can pretty much tell you...
Yeah, but
you don't know... You don't know what goes on in my mind when I'm freaking out that I have to make a choice between six different poskim.
Like, either you're... But
you go to a rabbi, you ask for a halakha question, I'll tell you what the difference is. When you go to a rabbi, you have your rabbi that you go to, and he gives you an answer, and that's it. When you go to a halakha question, like, you always shop around, because you want to, like... see what everybody else has to say. But halacha, you don't really shop around, because I'll just do what you tell me to, and that's it.
I would also say that it's not so simple to shop around. And you settle in the same way. I think that you should shop around halakhically until you find a person to settle on also. But the point is, there's two different realms in which you have to settle on somebody who's going to give you that perspective, or settle on a perspective, period. It doesn't matter whether it's attached to a person or not. I'm just saying, I think if you were to give more... If you were to... I think... Over time, when you spend more time with halakha...
There are differences in both, but I think the nature of the differences is different, if that makes sense.
They can be, but both exist. But there are differences. How does that relate back to what we were talking about? There are differences. Let's try to bring it back home. There are differences. However, once one takes the Derech HaTorah, there will be a general consensus on the most basic levels in a way where you will want to follow... those ways and keep to those things and be careful of the things that would keep you away from perfection in a way where even if you were to look at your friend and they achieve a mila, even if it's subtly different, you still recognize that that is a mila that was achieved, that even if it's different based on your own parameters, you still want to achieve that mila. You still want to achieve that.
Can you give an example?
Yeah, could you like to explain that a little bit?
No, it's good. Let's tease it out. If you see somebody who's davening mincha, and they're davening, and they're speaking of, we'll stop in a minute, so people can't daven mincha, and they're davening with deep, tremendous fervor, and they're shuckling so much, and they're so into it, right? And you're like, wow, I didn't realize how much fervor one can daven with. Now, that person is shuckling so much that they're sweating, and that's ridiculous. I don't know where they think that they can shuckle like that. And my philosophy in tefillah is that you stand in front of God like you're in fear and awe, and you don't move. But I'm going to do that with twice as much intensity, the same intensity as that person is shuckling. That's recognizing the maila and translating it into my own avodas Hashem, but recognizing that I could go further. That's being singed by the chuppah of my friend. I'm not, by the way, taking a stance on which way one should daven. I'm just saying that those are two legitimate ways. Two absolutely legitimate ways to daven, and in fact, the Mishnah Berurah Paskens is that way, that you can go in either direction, because halacha isn't simple. Right? You can go in either direction. The goal is, yichavim libo l'shem shamayim. But you've learned from the fervor of your friend, you disagree with them. You want to look at them and be like, chill out! You know, you're flapping your wings, like, take it easy. You know? You want to go over there and just, like, you know, tie them up a little bit. Like, it's okay, but you've learned from that, I can go so much farther. And that I want to do in my way, based on my tradition, based on my poskim, based on my rabbein, based on my mesorah. But I want to go farther. That to me would be a way to translate it, despite the subtle differences.
Okay, that's good.
Good?
Yeah.
Awesome. Okay, Adkan, we're nowhere near where we wanted to get to today, but we are a lot farther than I expected that we would get internally, and that's the most important thing. Just go with everybody.